Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Everyone deserves to have a roof over their head. If you start from that premise, housing for all becomes a moral imperative. And that's why a growing number of clergy see the lack of available and affordable housing in Ohio as a mission they are called to help solve. Across the U.S., the Yes in God's Backyard movement is gaining steam as churches look to free up their land, as states pass legislation, and as cities work to speed up zoning code changes and other obstacles. It's happening now in Ohio, too. It's just one of many initiatives in the works. And joining us now is Columbus City Council President Shannon Hardin. Welcome back to All Sides.
And thank you so much for having me.
So it seems like every day there's a new headline about a housing initiative somewhere in Central Ohio. We have the whole hour to talk about the city's efforts, but I wanted to start with this movement called Yes in God's Backyard.
Yes.
So you recently spoke to 50 faith leaders at Shiloh Baptist Church about affordable housing. What motivated your interest in this Yes in God's Backyard idea?
Well, it comes from the simple reality that I liken it to a tsunami, where there is something happening just outside of eyesight that is barreling itself our way. And my concern is that we have been acting like folks act when you see on the scenes of a tsunami, where they're still on the beach making sandcastles.
Yeah.
Like something's happening, but not really taking heed to, not creating, not being innovative, not building the boat that will allow this wave, which is people, the half a million to a million people that are coming to this region, not to wash us out, but in a way to lift all boats. And so Yes in God's Backyard is one initiative that we believe could have some impact to add more affordable housing units to the stock in Central Ohio. It's something that is important both to the community, but also to the faith congregations who have seen in-person church-going transition since the pandemic, where a lot of folks watch their church service online. Mm-hmm. And so now they have more parking that is just sitting there. In the late 99s and 2000s, a lot of churches, specifically in urban communities, bought up a lot of old, dilapidated land. They bought it from the land banks. They bought it from folks who were migrating out of Central City. And so they had all this land in Central City. And as Columbus continues to grow and we think about where are the new opportunities for partnerships, it is these faith institutions that are really coming to the table and really looking forward to allowing their moral teachings to go beyond the pew and out into the community and serve folks.
So how receptive are faith leaders to this? Because you could also see, on the one hand, a faith leader wants to keep their church up and running. They could sell this land, probably, you know, keep the church building, but sell the land around it and make some money rather than building affordable housing.
Well, I don't want them to lose out. Matter of fact, I want this to be a sustainability strategy for faith organizations. So I don't think that the initial push would be for faith institutions to sell the land even. Mm. They can come in as partners and do long-term 100-year leases on the land and literally become a partner in the deal so that as they're doing good, they are doing well as well for the church. But a lot of times, well, you know, as much as what we are trying to do, and we'll get into actually what we're trying to do with Yes in God's Backyard, is also give them the technical expertise so that they also are not taken advantage of. We're at the stage of housing development in Columbus where I'm sure these churches are already getting knocked on the door from different types of developers saying, hey, can we have that land? Can we have that land? Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are saying no because they don't know this space. They don't trust someone who's coming in. They think that someone's just trying to buy up their land on the cheap and do their own thing. And so we want to make sure that they're getting the technical assistance. And there are folks already out there who are doing this. On the Near East Side, Fifth Third Bank partnered with PACT in Oasis OSU to work with.
You're going to have to say what PACT is.
Sorry,
right?
Partners Achieving Community Transformation. It is a partnership between the city, the Housing Authority, OSU. OSU, I think, is now a majority a stake mm-hmm. in that revitalization of the Near East Side. They have worked with four church institutions, bringing together the technical experience and cash to help them move along and think through how they can use their land. And so it is already happening even in the city mm-hmm. of Columbus. And that technical piece I continue to stress because, you know, churches are faith institutions, but they have a deacon board, just like businesses have a board of directors. Well, our deacon boards are usually folks who are focused on the internal wellness of the church, so they might not have that built-in developer expertise. I don't have that built-in developer expertise.
Every deacon is not a real estate agent.
Exactly,
yes.
Exactly. Yeah. So giving them the comfort to have that external support is a big part of what we're trying to do as well.
Now, churches are tax-exempt.
Yes.
They don't contribute to property taxes. So you mentioned a second ago the idea of working with the churches. Maybe the city's not technically buying the land from them, but you're giving them like this 100-year deal. Would that land continue to be tax exempt?
I think that it depends. The way that land is tax exempt is if it still has a faith-related or social component to it. Mm. I will also put an asterisk here, as we have been focused on faith-owned land, but to be in accordance to state and federal law, we're actually going to be talking about nonprofit-owned land. And that way it does incorporate all faith-owned land, but also nonprofits who do social service as well. And so depending on what type of partnership, so if it is housing for seniors or housing for folks with disabilities or housing for folks who are exiting addiction, you can see how there can be those type of partnerships that would allow for them to continue to get the benefit of building on this land.
So churches in the past have played a role in housing. We're going to be talking a little bit later in the hour to Reverend John Egger, founding pastor of the United Methodist Church for All People. He's going to come on and talk about the housing work he's done. But is it just church leaders? Have other faith groups come to you, Jewish, Muslim? Are they a part of this conversation too?
For sure. This is open to everyone. One of the large churches that we hear about is the Catholic Church, where the Catholic Church is shrinking its physical footprint and looking to do these types of partnerships. The United Methodist Church is a church that is more centralized. So their churches are actually not owned by the congregation, the one congregation. They're owned by a centralized church. And they actually have a real estate faith leader that does the entire district and are working with folks like us. And so we have opened this up across the spectrum of all types of faith leaders because we need everybody at the table. One of the big things that I truly believe at this stage of Columbus's growth is that we need to cut everybody in on the deal. Everyone, just like we had the Marshall Plan during the war, where we had, you know, food rations and victory gardens. Everybody knew that this is our responsibility. We're all in on this. Because of this impending tsunami of people, we all have to understand that this is on all of us. Everybody is going to have to play a role. And so today and this year, we're talking about legislation with faith and nonprofit organizations and seeing the role that they can play in building. But next year, it's talking about emerging developers, making sure that they're able to get in on this. Next year, we should be talking to individuals. I think later we're talking about ADUs, accessory dwelling units, where individuals can get in on how can we add more housing to our community. But it's critically important. And what we are actually doing, so I talked a lot about the technical assistance. What we are doing is upzoning the faith-owned land. So by right, so last time I was here, we were talking about some of our zoning initiatives where we did.
Yeah, working to change the zoning codes, make them a little easier for people to do development. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. This is hyperdrive. So what we would actually do is by right, make faith-owned land have the ability to build on. Mm-hmm. So it would usurp them going through the long, tedious process of going through different commissions and checks to be able to develop. They would just by right be able to have a level of density with multifamily housing.
Have you changed that code yet? Or no, is it in the works?
It is in the works. We will do this by the end of the year.
Okay. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with Columbus City Council President Shannon Hardin about affordable housing and how the faith community can help. At the state level, Ohio Senator Michelle Reynolds, she's a Republican from Canal Winchester, she is working on an Ohio version of this Yes in God's Backyard bill that has happened in California.
Yes.
So can you tell me more about what the state needs to do? Does the state also have to play a role in this for you?
And I think this is really significant because in this time where Democrats and Republicans don't work together and it's almost like scarier and taboo, Senator Reynolds and I have become fast friends around housing. I am actually so jealous of her. I wish I would have talked to her before we started calling our Yes in God's Backyard. Her initiative is called The Promised Land.
Oh.
I mean, how? Come on.
There's so many catchy titles.
That was
all right.
So good. And what
the state bill is called the Promised Land bill?
The Promised Land
bill. All right, there we go.
there is an actual markup, and I don't have it in front of me right now. But what Senator is attempting to do and get passed through the legislature is to basically bring faith-owned, nonprofit-owned land into what are called opportunity zones, or give you the benefit of being in an opportunity zone, which is essentially a 10% tax credit on that land. Why that is a big deal is that's basically turned into cash because you partner with a developer, and that then takes off the 10% of the tax credit that they will need that they can either put into the deal or go out and get financed. So it makes that land so much more valuable. It brings something to the table right away to developers. So if you put that on top of land that is already upzoned and able to develop housing, now you have, and then the third piece, again, I keep going, and the technical support so that these churches are not taken advantage of, and they're actually able to work through this process. I think now we have the real opportunity to add more housing using this. Right now, we know that about 4% of our land in Central Ohio is owned by faith organizations. That's a lot of space. That's a lot of opportunity to build housing.
I'm no tax law expert. So if the land for churches is tax exempt, how does a tax credit help them? Where the tax, like, who's paying the taxes?
That's a really good point. So if the end use of the land that they transfer or do a 100-year lease is no longer connected to a faith action. So if they're not doing something along the lines of what their faith is practicing, then it does revert back to a taxable land. So this would then extend this tax credit to the developer and to the community, to the church.
Okay, I see. Yes. I'll become a tax law expert in my next life.
I hear they have all the fun.
Yes. Okay. So, but you also mentioned earlier the idea of, you mentioned the Marshall Project and how all residents had to buy in on this with the food rations and the Victory Gardens. So, I mean, there is a way for all residents to buy into this. Columbus residents will vote in November on the largest bond package in the city's history.
Yes.
So $1.9 billion. If it passes, how much of that $1.9 billion bond package is for affordable housing?
An historic amount. $500 million, $500 million will go towards affordable housing in Central Ohio, in the city of Columbus. And this is building on our first ever bond package several years ago for $50 million. Then 3 years ago, we came back and asked for $250 million. We have been able to activate all of those dollars. And I think we're up to 5,000 or 6,000 units that have been put onto the market that just would not be there without this level of investment. And so with this $500 million ability, these bonds, again, that are, this is not a tax increase. This is allows us to borrow at a lower rate and say that if we were not able to pay back, the city would back it. So this is not a tax increase. We are not raising one's taxes. This is allowing us to go after dollars cheaper. And so having that $500 million available allows us to do innovative projects. It allows us to partner with developers. It allows us to buy the land that we need to hold and keep affordable as Columbus property goes up and gets more expensive. And we think about Link Us and the need to do land acquisition along those corridors to make sure that we don't just have transit where Link Us is, but that we have housing that is affordable close to the transit. The affordable housing bond will allow us to do all of those things. It will allow us to make sure that folks are able to stay in their homes. You know, a lot of time folks get priced out based off of renovations that they're not able to keep up, and the house deteriorates. It is cheaper to keep someone in their home and keep a house viable than it is to have someone move out. We can partner with complexes that, again, need to stay affordable. But because they are getting pushed by out-of-state landlords to sell and to jack up prices, we can come in and be a better partner and support keeping those houses affordable, those units.
Coming up, Council President Shannon Hardin is staying with us, and we're going to be talking with Reverend John Edgar, the founding pastor of United Methodist Church for All People. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Rare to find a podcast that can actually change your life. But when the show's called Life Kit, that's kind of the whole point. I'm Mariel Segarra. 3 times a week on the Life Kit podcast, we guide you through a topic we could all use help with, from personal development to healthy living to managing your dinero, with takeaways so you can start living what you learn right away. Escucha el Life Kit podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. There's a new movement to counter NIMBYism. You know, the not-in-my-backyard stance that pushes back on unwanted development. The new movement that's gaining steam is called Yes in God's Backyard. And it's inviting development of unused church lands. In Ohio and elsewhere, places of worship are looking to free up their land to make room for affordable housing. States are passing legislation. Municipalities are working to speed up zoning code changes and other obstacles. Still with us is Columbus City Council President Shannon Hardin. Thanks again for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And joining us now is Reverend John Edgar, president of the Columbus Housing Enterprise and the founding pastor of the United Methodist Church for All People, which primarily serves low-income people. Welcome to All Sides, Reverend Edgar.
Delighted to be with you today. I appreciate it.
So this movement that is called Yes in God's Backyard is being described as a new trend. But does it feel like that to you? Does it feel like a new trend? It's kind of something you've been working on for years.
Yes, there have been a lot of folks in faith-based organizations, including here in Central Ohio, who for 50 plus years have been doing some things around housing. National Church Residences, it does a lot of senior housing, got started in 1961. It's a national initiative, but its corporate offices are here. Then if you go back into the 1970s, the Catholic Diocese developed housing for seniors. I was involved with a Presbyterian pastor and one of the people from the city back in 1987 and bringing Habitat for Humanity to Columbus. It had been started a decade before in Georgia. And then in my own case, in 2004, with the United Methodist Church for All People, we formed a community development corporation called Community Development for All People. And we began developing housing on a very small scale. Even back then, it was in part because of the support from the city of Columbus that made land available, made it easier for us to borrow money. And that initiative on the south side of Columbus, with a lot of support also from Nationwide Children's Hospital, we've actually developed $150 million of affordable housing and various partnerships, all including the involvement of this United Methodist Community Development Corporation. And then that just one other piece. And since I retired from that organization, one of the things I've been doing is helping to launch a statewide initiative of United Methodists called the Ohio United Methodist Community Development Collaborative. And its purpose is to help on exactly what City Council President Hardin was describing. And I am so appreciative for his work in this initiative. But across the whole state, we're trying to help churches understand that they can use some of their land, which is such an asset, to create housing for people who otherwise would not have a safe, decent place to live. So the statewide organization provides technical assistance, and we've even written a primer for churches that want to understand how does affordable housing work and how do you get involved.
It sounds like you're busier in retirement than you were when you were actually doing your work.
That might be true.
Yeah, that's a lot. So you've been involved in a project that's not quite finalized yet that would bring Council President Hardin's vision to light. It's called the Bethel International Village on Bethel Road. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Delighted to share. So Bethel International United Methodist Church is located on Bethel Road, not too far from Micro Center, if you're trying to figure out its location. And for the past decade, they've been on this journey to transform their church into a community center for the people who live there. And they're just very large numbers of immigrants who are in that Northwest quadrant. And so they do programming and truly have hundreds of new Americans in their building every week. They operate 7 days a week. And they've realized that one of the challenges facing many of these families is having a decent place to live. And so we are working right now and very much appreciate the conversations I've had with Council President Hardin about this project. But our plan is to build 39 four-bedroom apartment flats so that larger immigrant families can have a decent place to live. And this church has 7 acres of land. It includes parking in their facility, but they can afford to set aside about 2.5 of those acres and build these larger apartment dwellings. And so we're really excited about the project. We have a proposal into the city right now. But in the sense of scale, this will be a $17 million project. And we're asking at this point the city to consider giving $5 million so we can keep rents low. And it's another part of this whole challenge of making certain we can build something, we can build it well, and then also have enough money to operate it for the long term, but keep rents affordable. So when the council president is talking about technical assistance, it really matters all along the process of developing affordable housing. From the very beginning, when a church is going to decide what developer they want to work with, to everything through the process of construction, but then also into management. And so, again, I'm really excited about what the council president has proposed and do think and really hope that Bethel International Village may emerge as the first great poster child for this new initiative.
Yeah. Council President Hardin, bringing you back into the conversation, how close are we to making this happen? I mean, it sounds like the plan is planned.
Yes. We're excited about this project. It's right square on to what we are trying to do in the kind of partnership. And I think it'll be a great example and a great proof of concept, again, to organizations, faith organizations who have not gone down this road. I mean, just about everybody in Columbus and in the faith community and housing community knows of Reverend Edgar. And so having him, again, talk about that technical assistance is so, so important. But I think this is a great example, going back to your last point, of what would we use the affordable housing dollars on.
So the $5 million he's talking about could come from this bond package.
For sure.
Got it.
Those are the type of projects we are able to support.
Well, another question is, though, what is considered affordable housing? Because you, Reverend Edgar, you said you wanted to make these they're four-bedroom apartments. That's very large, right? First of all. But then also, what is considered affordable? Because what's affordable to one is not affordable to another. So how do you set the rent?
Yeah, It's a very good point, Amy. What I would say is, even though it is complex and things vary, beginning with the federal government and then the city of Columbus embraces the same standard, it in essence says that if the rents that we set are affordable to people, it's called 80% of average median income, then we've hit some level of important affordability. And then, you know, if there's more subsidy, then that number can go down and, you know, and even get to the place where if folks' income is only 60% of the average, they're still going to be able to afford the rent. It's also true, just in general, it is, you know, I don't want to get us diverted, but people do have to have some level of income, even if it comes from a Section 8 voucher, because there's just ongoing cost to maintaining a quality property. So, yes, we have to build it, but then we also have to make certain that there's income, you know, to pay for the costs. There's a lot of money that's borrowed in these, and there's debt service. But so you're right. There are differing levels of subsidy and differing levels of what's affordable. But right now, there is such a housing shortage and crisis in Central Ohio that we need housing at all of these levels, from sort of middle income down to very low income. The $500 million will go to help make certain housing is built and that it's and ensuring it remains affordable.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the Yes in God's Backyard movement and more affordable housing with Reverend John Edgar, president of the Columbus Housing Enterprise and founding pastor of the United Methodist Church for All People. Also with us is Columbus City Council President Shannon Harden. President Harden, what did you want to say about affordable, the word affordable housing?
I just wanted to add, what we are doing by upzoning or by right allowing for the faith institutions to or the nonprofits to build on the land is cutting out the time that it would take to go through different parts of the commission process and the building process. And so we know that time is money, and we have so often had to put cash on the table to buy down affordability into projects. This is just another way, another thing that we can do to bring not just the cash, but also the process, make the process easier and more affordable. So that it is our hope that the faith institutions are able to use that as well to pull down price.
Reverend Edgar, there was a profile of you in Columbus Monthly a few years ago that called you perhaps the city's most unlikely power broker. It called you a mild-mannered minister who transformed his neighborhood with a tool rarely used in city politics, civic affairs, or real estate development, and that tool is grace. So what are the key things to bringing political leaders and faith leaders together to solve a problem here like housing?
I think trust is a really key factor. Because these deals are complex, and we're also inviting, this was mentioned in your previous segment, pastors and deacons and local church leaders who don't have a lot of housing experience, and we're asking them to get involved in something that can be incredibly valuable, but isn't something they're really familiar with. And so I'm convinced that part of what we're trying to do and need to do even more of is create settings in which people can have confidence and trust one another. And hopefully that's part of the journey that I've been engaged in for now for 30 years in housing and getting to know people and building relationships of trust and confidence. And then alongside that, I would say in this initiative, some of this technical assistance, I believe, should be and will be making certain that church leaders have access to attorneys and other folks that they can talk to get perspective, so that they don't risk falling into a situation where a not as a scrupulous developer would want to take advantage of them. But again, what I would say a lot of this comes back to is
Reverend Edgar, I think whenever you hit your AirPod there, you accidentally muted yourself. So, there you go.
Yeah. Sorry about that, the technology. But,
fancy, but yeah.
For us to trust one another and to be able to build relationships. One of the things I got taught early in that is that the deal is short and hopefully the relationships are long. And so the fact that, and I mean, it's unique, but I've actually known President Hardin since he was a child.
Yes.
And there's a kind of trust that comes out of
sure.
it.
Yeah, I mean, my next question was, President Hardin was like, are there any separation of church and state issues here? Like, should the government be working with the churches like this?
I think this is exactly what the church is called to do, especially in a moment like this, where I'm talking a lot about just this national moment that we're living in, where the federal government is really defederalizing itself. It's taking its hand off of a lot of things that it used to do in community. And so we have to, I say grow a new muscle, but it's probably an old muscle where we really do rely on these strong, strong institutions that are in every neighborhood who have deep history of literally serving people. So I think that this is actually in line of how we make it through a tough new decade of doing it on our own. And it's not just faith or organizations, it's also nonprofit owned land as well. And so it is open to folks, but we want to make sure that that technical assistance, because these faith leaders have this moral calling already, this is not a too big of a leap if they have the support and they have the know-how and they know that they won't be taken advantage of. Our faith leaders already are serving folks. They already are stepping up in the gaps for our seniors, for those battling addiction. They want to do more. And so this gives us an opportunity for us to continue to stack hands, to go back to the olden days. I remind folks that the church didn't used to do just do chicken dinners because folks like to eat chicken. They were feeding folks. They were raising money to pay people's rent back in the day. And I think that this is just the evolution of and the professionalization of the church being able to serve our community.
Reverend Nager, is the Yes in God's Backyard movement also an acknowledgement that fewer Americans are identifying with a religious faith? You know, there's fewer Americans going to religious services actually in a church. And so churches need to branch out to survive, and they need to look and become real estate agents too.
There's an aspect of that. I'm in the United Methodist Church, and yes, we are at times closing buildings, and I'm in that group of folks saying, well, then let's repurpose this land for housing as much as possible. I do know there have been some recent transactions on the south side of Columbus involving Nationwide Children's Hospital and the Catholic Diocese,
yes,
where some property has been sold from a parish that was closed. It is going to be developed as housing, actually in a joint venture with Community Development for All People as well. There are at times contractions that create this opportunity. And also, as President Hardin indicated earlier, even when the churches are staying open, we don't necessarily need all that parking that we built out in the 1960s and 1970s. In fact, in the case of Bethel International United Methodist Church, some of that 2.5 acres is asphalt right now, but will become the site, for these apartments. So, yeah, there's an aspect of adapting to the current reality. And I certainly am in the group that thinks it's a good idea for churches to figure out how to generate earned income,
yes,
especially when we want to be able to serve people who don't have a lot of money. In other words, the folks who are moving into these new apartments that'll be built at Bethel International Church are not necessarily going to turn around and become members of that congregation and then tithe their income, but it's still missionally what the church,
yes,
wants to do. Yeah.
And just to end on before we let you go, Reverend Nager, you since your
sure.
retirement, you started to serve as president of a new nonprofit called the Columbus Housing Enterprise, and it has a mission
yeah.
to preserve naturally occurring affordable housing. What does that mean?
Right. Well, the basic notion is that as we build new housing that's affordable, that's great. But if existing affordable housing goes out of service, then we're taking one step forward and maybe two steps back. And so Columbus Housing Enterprise, which was the the inspiration behind it is two of the most successful Central Ohio developers, Don Kelly and Bob Weiler. And they took $100 million of their older apartments. They placed them into this new nonprofit. And we paid them $50 million for $100 million worth of property. So it was a $50 million donation. But it was intended, and it will continue to do so, to inspire others in Central Ohio, developers who have older properties, to say, instead of selling them for the highest dollar and perhaps having them flip to high-end rent or falling into disrepair, we believe there is a role for making certain that older apartments stay in good use and stay affordable. And so, yeah, there are many different parts of this. And maybe I'd close with going back to something else that the council president said, that there's a way for everybody to be involved. I really admire what he said at the meeting at Shiloh when he reminded all of us in the room that we are in a time when we have to be thinking locally and not relying on the federal government or other places. I mean, yes, I believe the federal government should do as much as possible. Sure. But what are we going to do right here, right now? And so all these initiatives, yes, in God's backyard, and this notion of let's preserve naturally occurring affordable housing as a piece of it. The acronym for that is NOAA. So I think it's kind of funny that in retirement, I'm this United Methodist pastor whose main job right now is to save NOAA. So.
Well, that is Reverend John Edgar, president of the Columbus Housing Enterprise and founding pastor of United Methodist Church for All People. Thank you so much for your time today.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor Edgar.
And coming up, City Council President Shannon Hardin is staying with us, and we're going to talk about a few other housing initiatives he's working on. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Rare to find a podcast that can actually change your life. But when the show's called Life Kit, that's kind of the whole point. I'm Mariel Segarra. 3 times a week on the Life Kit podcast, we guide you through a topic we could all use help with, from personal development to healthy living to managing your dinero, with takeaways so you can start living what you learn right away. Escucha el Life Kit podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jarovich. We've been talking this hour about housing and how the city is partnering with faith leaders for an Ohio version of the Yes in God's Backyard movement. This is but one of the many housing initiatives the city of Columbus is pursuing. Still with us is Columbus City Council President Shannon Hardin. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you so much, Amy.
So City Council created Columbus Forward. Yes. It's a legislative platform that recently launched, and it's meant to address issues arising from the city's rapid growth and future growth. How does housing fit into Columbus Forward?
Sure. Let me tell you a story. So last year, I got a call. It was a young lady who was in her sophomore year at Otterbein. She lived with her grandmother, and her grandmother was on Social Security, paid $1,200 a month. She called and said that she was getting evicted because
her grandma or
her grandmother was getting evicted because somebody had bought, an out-of-state actor had bought their property and rose rent from $900 a month to $1,700 a month. Mm. And that young lady happened to be my niece. Mm. And this story is not just happening to one or two or three folks. It's happening to hundreds of apartment complexes across the state and across the region as folks are coming in from out of state to buying from local landlords and jacking up prices. Columbus Forward has us asking the question, what good is growth if it's not good for all of us? If it doesn't uplift all of us. And so we have focused on several different initiatives that we believe will have impact as Columbus continues to grow. So YGBI, Yes in God's Backyard, is just one of those 9 initiatives. Another is historic preservation, because as we grow, it's not about throwing out all the old. It's about making sure that we do put in stipulations of preserving Columbus's history and making sure that that is seen as we move into the next phase of Columbus. That initiative is being led by Council President Pro Tem Rob Dorrance, who does a lot of work with the historic preservation units in terms of housing through the zoning committee. So that's a really big deal. Another initiative being led by my colleague Otto Beatty is around accessory dwelling units. This is another way that we say everybody can get on and get in on the action. Mm-hmm. You know, say you have a child that is coming home from college, their first house, if they want to be next to you, their first apartment, they might not be able to pay the $1,500, $1,700 a month in rent. So, you know, we have space in our backyards. We have spaces over garages. But you have to right now to build an accessory dwelling unit, jump through so many different hoops just to get it done. And so what legislation Otto is working on is to make sure that by right, everybody, if you have the space, you can come through the process and build accessory dwelling units on your space. Think about an aging grandmother, an aging mother who wants to be closer to you, but she doesn't want to be in your house.
Yeah, not a mother-in-law suite.
Right.
But
You know, and they do have attached ADUs, but yeah, they come in so many different ways. All we're saying is, let's not make it hard. And I really do push back on folks who say, oh, well, that housing initiative won't solve the problem, or that housing initiative won't solve the problem. Well, hell, not individually, but we need all tools on the tool belt to really attack this head on. This is literally about bringing everybody onto the table.
So the accessory dwelling unit situation, what are you, have you changed the zoning codes? Because I keep hearing about this. Is it still in the works? Like, if I want to build an apartment above my garage right now, I live in Clintonville, can I do it?
We are working right now to, by the end of the year, just like we will pass legislation by the end of the year for Yes in God's Backyard, Councilmember Beatty intends to bring legislation before council, before his term is up in December, to make it much more flexible, much easier by right for you to build accessory dwelling unit.
Okay. You'll still have to probably get a permit, right?
Oh,
and you'll still
sure.
have to go through. It's
for
not
sure.
gonna, you're not making it like
anyone
can build anything.
And you can't just go and build, but mm-hmm. but by right you will have the ability to, but you'll still have to go through the permitting process through the city. But even there's work that can be done, because these are so new and the concept mm-hmm. is so new. How do we standardize some of this so that it does move through quicker as we go through the process?
So the city has updated a lot of zoning codes, or is in the process of updating zoning codes. But even with these updates, is the city nimble enough for all of these pressing housing issues? I mean, the conversation every time we have it seems like a lot.
Yeah. Well, I think that we're going to have to continue to bring innovation to the table. And this is where I give the administration credit, but also say that maybe council and the administration have different responsibilities. Every day we have to be building housing. Every day right now. And so we have the development department led by the mayor making deals, spending down those affordable housing dollar bonds to get housing built. Well, council has a different role. We get to throw the ball out there far and bring in new ideas and see who is doing what around the country. If we know that in 10 years we have to build these 200,000 units, and we know that what we're doing right now is not going to get us there, then what are the other things that we are seeing around the country that we can bring into the conversation, bring into our lexicon of how we talk through and do demonstration projects, so that the things that we can do day to day, the bread and butter of how we build housing, maybe have new and additional things that we can add on to that. We are looking everywhere right now around really creative ideas around housing. Looking at Atlanta, who assessed all of their public land, not just that they owned, but the county, the library systems, all the public-owned land. And they said, hey, let's come together. Let's put this all together and let's build 20,000 housing units on it. Mm-hmm. 3 years later, they have 13,000 units in process. That's innovative. Like, mm-hmm. We should bring that to the table. We have to bring that to the table. We're looking at Denver. Denver's new mayor came in and said, we have a homelessness problem. We have a thousand, we have thousands of tents through our community. He said in the first year of his mayoralship that he was going to get rid of or move a thousand tents off the street into permanent housing for our homeless. Those are the big, bold, creative ideas that we have to bring to the table now. And we can't discredit or say, well, that won't solve it, and scare folks away from bringing these ideas. Mm-hmm. No, let's try it. Let's bring in and see how other communities are really trying to solve this issue collectively.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about new housing initiatives with Columbus City Council President Shannon Hardin. There is the issue of the greater need when it comes to affordable housing, but not just rental properties, but also single family homes. Yes. I read recently that people just can't find a small. There are no starter homes anymore.
Right. No, it is very critical, and I actually think this is really important to cutting everybody in on the deal of growth. Also, we know because we all homeowners felt the increase of last year, 40% year over year increase over the last 3 years, property value. One of the upsides of growth is that your value, property value, goes up. So if we can get more folks into homeownership now, they will be able to actually ride or get some of the positive benefits of homeowner of this growth thing that has really beaten us up on the other side. If we can get folks who would not see themselves as homeowners into the process right now, then they really can. But that means that we are going to have to be creative, and we have about building new units that are more affordable for homeownership. We started a pilot last year with extending CRAs to single family homes.
CRAs.
Community revitalization credits, basically, mm-hmm. To hold affordability in homeownership housing, single family housing projects. Product. This is the first time we've done anything like this, and mm-hmm. it's flying off the market. Folks need to get into now. They also need the credit support and the financial training leading up to mm-hmm. it. But folks are getting into it. We are doing this with the land trust and allowing for folks who would not necessarily be able to buy into the market right now to get an affordable product by us holding the value of the land, the city or the land bank, but allowing for a less expensive product to be a person's first home for a home ownership. But it's critically important as if we want folks to reap some of the benefits of this growth.
I wanted to talk a little bit about rental assistance. Federal pandemic era funds run out, and the city has approved almost $500,000 in grants to 7 nonprofits.
Yeah.
How is this going to help prevent evictions?
Well, what we, and this was just last week, council passed the $500,000 for the 7 organizations that will distribute the last bits of emergency rental assistance. That actually will be $3 million that they will be able to distribute that we passed in July before we went on break. And so there is a truth that the hundreds of millions of dollars that we had in our community over the last several years that literally kept 30,000 families in housing is gone. And so we are going to have to be creative on the local level to figure out how we can get upstream, how we can still support folks who are going to go through the eviction process. I am very concerned because we are on track this year to file 25,000 eviction notices by the end of the year. By context, that's like evicting the entire community of Dublin.
That's a lot of people.
Yes, could be up to 100,000 folks who are housing vulnerable. And so we know that we are struggling with how do we fill the gaps of, I mean, over the last several years, we put $130 million into eviction prevention work. We don't have those resources, but how can we work with our partners? How can we zero in on women and children to make sure that we are staying still in our community, regardless of what happens? It will not be okay for women and children to be evicted and homeless. So how can we get upstream? So I'm really proud of the city for stepping into this space to be being innovative, not throwing up our hands and say, well, we didn't do it before, so we're not going to do it now. We're going to have to. And it's because it's a good investment. We're going to have to be there. for every $1 that we spend keeping a family in their home, it saves $4 upstream in either shelter or the supportive services that one would need after being evicted. So this is critical work. It's a good investment from our community. We're going to have to continue to stack hands. This is not an easy one. And I think that we all need to be focused on this homelessness issue in Columbus to see what all we can do. And that's why I'm really encouraged by the conversation the community is having through the Funding Review Advisory Commission, or the FRAC, to have a larger conversation around more sustainable dollars for homelessness.
We have less than 2 minutes left, but I wanted to ask you about requiring property owners to register apartments and rental homes in the city so that the city council has an idea of how many are out there, how many are empty, how much people are charging for. You've considered this before. Cleveland has one. Cincinnati has it. Residents like the idea. Landlords don't.
Yes.
What are we going to do here? Are we going to have a rental registry?
We're the outlier here. And it's this simple. Again, it comes back to resources. Over the last couple of years, the city of Columbus has had to step in and save several very, very large housing displacement incidents. Colonial Village, and another where we had nearly 1,400 families to be displaced. And we just came in with our resources and housed them for several months. Millions and millions and millions of dollars. The city doesn't have the ability to do that now. And so by creating a rental registry, it gives us a better understanding of where the housing is, what state the housing is in, and allows us to be more upfront or upstream in terms of how we support and keep folks in quality housing throughout the community. This is not meant to be punitive. This is not meant to go after small landlords, or certainly landlords who are living in the units as well. Mm-hmm. But it is to say that we have this large problem and that we are the outlier city in not doing this.
Okay. So you'd like to see it happen soon?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Well, we're out of time, so we'll end it there. But we've been talking about housing this hour with Columbus City Council President Shannon Harden. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy.
And this has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. If you missed any part of today's show, you can listen back at our website, wosu.org/allsides. Subscribe to our podcast. Listen in our free mobile app. This is 89.7 NPR News.